Welcome one and all to episode 95 of the NFL Draft Breakdown Podcast. I'm your host, Seth Cox. With me tonight, my co-host, Justin Higdon. And Justin, you and I had the dreaded September weddings this last weekend. So not much going to be discussed when it comes to week two wrap up and how the draft prospects look. We'll get back to that next week. But we will be looking forward to week three of the college football season. And we will look at one game where your beloved Ohio State Buckeyes took it on the chin from the Oklahoma Sooners and kind of discuss the Baker Mayfield phenomenon at this point. Other than having to miss the game for a wedding, how was your weekend?
Well, I think missing the game for a wedding turned out to be a blessing, actually, considering how the game went. Of course, Oklahoma won 31-16. People in Columbus are talking about wanting to bench JT Barrett. Ohio State recruits are talking about Barrett's backup, Dwayne Haskins, and trying to hype him up. Urban Meyer's staunchly supporting his fifth-year senior. I don't think there will be a change at quarterback. They play Army this week. Sort of a weird matchup, but I don't think Ohio State's offense will struggle against Army. We'll see if they do. I mean, who knows? They've had kind of a rough go. But missing that game actually turned out not to be so bad because the wedding was fun, and I got to watch a little Cleveland Indians baseball. They're on a huge, huge record-breaking winning streak at this point. But, Seth, you know, before we get into the Ohio State game, we do want to talk about Baker Mayfield a little bit, but not, I don't want to shy away from my own hot take that was on episode 94 last week when I talked up Northwestern quarterback Clayton Thorson, and I did get an opportunity to watch one game last Saturday before that wedding. And my take on Clayton Thorson being a riser, being a party crasher into possibly day two of the draft, that's looking really crappy right now. Not only did I talk about it on the podcast, but I wrote about it on Revenge of the Birds last Friday, my weekly draft column. I promise you, those of you out there listening, the draft column is generally good other than this take, but Clayton Thorson struggled mightily last week against Duke. Duke's defensive line created a ton of pressure. Thorson really struggled. His accuracy was bad. His pocket awareness wasn't good. And he really struggled mightily on third downs, where I did note last week that he wasn't great on third downs passing, but it was just ugly. This is why we can't do like week-to-week scouting. And I usually, Seth, I shy away from making bold proclamations. I usually couch my analysis and closely guard it so that I can hedge my bets all season long. But last week I went out there with Thorson, and it seems like it's biting me in the ass this week. So hopefully, you know, I still like Thorson's tools, but, you know, big arm, mobile guy, tall guy, experienced starter. But, man, I have made fun of people for liking guys like Brandon Bridge and Josh Allen and guys like that because of tools. So I don't want to be a tool myself. I wanted to fess up right off the bat, off the top of the show, and say Clayton Thorson hot takes. Maybe I jumped the gun a little bit there. So we'll have to see on him.
It's okay, because that's the thing. That's what we do on this show. That's what we strive to do differently than everybody else is laugh at our own mistakes, because if you can't laugh at yourself, well, somebody else is going to be laughing at you. So might as well enjoy when you say something that's maybe a little over excitable about a Northwestern quarterback. So I'll just remind you.
That'll teach me. But, you know, Trevor Siemian played pretty well on Monday night. So maybe, you know, there's still a shot. There's still a shot. You know, I'm not giving up just yet. I'm just admitting just being a little bit overzealous last week.
When you look at the other conversation that's needing to be had at this point, it's regarding Baker Mayfield. And we'll get to the game, but the conversation's now becoming, is he Russell Wilson? Because, you know, every short mobile quarterback is either Russell Wilson or Johnny Manziel. Those are the only two that we can compare him to. And, you know, they put Manziel on the bad side of the spectrum because, well, he's not in the NFL, but he's not in the NFL or he's not in the NFL because he flamed out as a player. He just flamed out as a person. Now, you can look at other players, maybe that haven't even gotten a chance, maybe a Vernon Adams. I'm trying to think of some other really small, mobile guys that were only quarterbacks. But when you look at Mayfield and executives, you know, anonymous executives, obviously not actually NFL executives, they're starting the Russell Wilson comparisons. We talked about this a little bit last week, why I don't agree with Russell Wilson. I don't think that he has a strong enough arm to be compared to Russell Wilson. But is this Mayfield hype serious at this point, or is this still coming off of what have been two great performances? I mean, he's neck and neck with Lamar Jackson in terms of Heisman candidacy right now. And to be fair to Mayfield, Ohio State's a better team than anybody's Jackson has played thus far. Or is this a legitimate, like, this is a guy that is going to have a chance to be not just drafted, but, you know, on in the first 2 days of this draft?
So I guess the question really should be, like, does Baker Mayfield's performance against Ohio State change anything for us? Because he's in his, you know, basically fourth year as a starter. He started parts of 4 years. He's in his third whole season starting at Oklahoma. Does this win change anything? Is this a signature win, I guess, so to speak? Why would it change anything for us? We have so much tape on this guy already. And my answer to that is no, it doesn't really change anything for me. I don't like the Russell Wilson comparison either, because I don't like comparisons to players who are that unique. For the same reason, I wouldn't like a Johnny Manziel comparison. I just think that's underselling what Johnny Manziel was as a college player in his 2 years at Texas A&M. Mayfield has moments of brilliance. He's a unique guy in and of himself. He has an interesting delivery. I think he starts with his hands kind of low. Cocks his throwing arm back almost like a baseball player batting. And he does have a quick release, but it's almost like borderline winding up to throw it. And I think that windup gets a little bigger the more velocity he wants to put on the ball. That indicates that the arm strength might not be top-notch. I think we can say that about some of these other smaller guys that have come down the pike in recent years. He's been really accurate so far this year as far as completion percentage. I think a lot of that shows up on tape. It's a little better than I probably would have given him credit for before. So he's got these things going for him. He's a mobile guy. He's a pretty good athlete. I'm not sure. You know, I definitely don't think he's the type of athlete or running threat that Manziel or Russell Wilson are. We already knew all this stuff about Baker Mayfield. So now he's got this signature win. And now at the end of the game, he goes to midfield and he plants the Oklahoma flag in victory. A couple days later, I guess, apologized, said he was caught up in the moment. Look, I'm an Ohio State graduate. I don't have a problem with him planting the flag. I think it's part of college showmanship. I love that kind of competitiveness. It's fun. It's meant to be fun. I even retweeted a video of him doing it. I don't care, but that is kind of a showy thing, and we know in the past that NFL scouts have had kind of issues with this. Does the flag planting, does the apology, does that help him, hurt him, or does nobody care? Is it just all going to be forgotten?
I think it'll be forgotten, but it bothers me more that he felt like he had to apologize, and maybe he didn't feel like he had to apologize, but it bothers me more that he apologized about planting the flag, because let's be honest, he planted something else in Ohio State that night too. Like he absolutely showed that he can play at a high level, whether or not that's a starting NFL quarterback or not. I don't know. That remains to be seen. You know, if I was to throw out a comparison, it'd be like a more athletic Colt McCoy at this point. Like he's not,
I like Colt McCoy as a comparison. I think Mayfield's got a little bit more edge to him, like right, personality-wise.
And I think I think he's a little riskier with the ball too. Like McCoy was very cerebral and knew how to take care of the ball. Like Mayfield has a little Johnny Manziel at him when he's got the ball. He's got a little F you. I'm going to throw this up and let my guy make a play, which I'm fine with. Like, you know, again, I've talked about that with Mason Rudolph. Like, you have to trust your guys now, but there's a difference between throwing it up and letting your guy make a play and underthrowing your guy. So again, the arm strength, I do worry about. Obviously, the size is always going to be a concern in the NFL, but his attitude, he believes in himself. And this is a guy that was a walk-on at Texas Tech, you know, fought the NCAA for his, you know, eligibility back. Like, what he's shown me over and over again is that he's a big-time competitor, and he wants the pressure, and maybe spotlight isn't the right word, but he wants to be in the big moment because he believes in himself and believes in his skill set. That doesn't always translate, but he's also a guy that has proven he is a good college quarterback and deserves a shot to make it in the NFL. I don't know what that means, whether it's, you know, a day two pick or a day three pick. He's going to get drafted and a team's going to give him a shot.
Yeah, I wonder if he felt the need to apologize here because he had the run-in with the law in the offseason where he did get arrested for public intoxication. And that should not start Johnny Manziel comparisons. I don't think that's going to end up being the same thing, but it's certainly going to be a question that people are going to ask him. They're going to look at this edge. Is it competitiveness or is it arrogance? I'm not sure. I lean toward competitiveness with this guy. Like you said, he fought the NCAA. He fought the Big 12 on an eligibility rule about transferring, and he got that extra year of eligibility. But then by playing that extra year for that eligibility, does that also say something about him as a prospect? Just because we've talked about this before, the best quarterback prospects leave early. This is a guy who's a good college quarterback. If we go with the Colt McCoy comparison, remember Colt McCoy got drafted in the third round. We've seen other senior quarterbacks we didn't think too highly of get drafted in the third to fifth round range. I think Tony Pauline said prior to the season that he had a fifth round grade on Mayfield, and he's kind of softened on that in recent weeks, indicating that his grade may be a little bit higher now. I think that's the range he's going to go, third to fifth round. I think that's fine, but that tells me he's probably a backup.
But, and I think, yeah, exactly. I think, but we've also seen guys, you know, I've talked about it before. Mike Glennon doesn't have the strongest arm. I know he's big. That doesn't mean he has a strong arm. Your Browns took Cody Kessler in the third round, who looks like a career backup type guy. The Patriots.
Third string.
The Patriots took Jacoby Brissett, who's a really good athlete, better arm than Mayfield, but, you know, the Patriots traded him because they got something for him. There was rumors that he may have been cut. So, you know, third round, and then you have Davis Webb, who couldn't beat out Geno Smith in the Giants quarterback competition. You know, you see guys all the time. I think Nathan Peterman's an interesting case right now, fifth round guy who's the main backup in Buffalo. So who is Mayfield? Where does he go? I think you're right. Third or fifth round sounds about right for him, sounds about accurate and where he belongs as a prospect. And, you know, that'll give him a chance to make it as at least a backup in this league, and a team will give him a chance to start eventually.
And I have zero doubt in my mind that he's going to get invited to the Senior Bowl. And I think he's the type of player that should and will accept a Senior Bowl invitation, provided that he's healthy.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't see any reason. He's a competitor. And even though this week, he, like you said, Seth, he lives for these big games, but he doesn't always play well in the big games. This time he did. So the Senior Bowl will be another opportunity for him to show up on that big stage. And I would be shocked if he didn't take that opportunity. This isn't going to be like a Kirk Cousins situation where Connor Cook situation where he turned it down. I know Cook might have had a shoulder injury going on there, but there were questions about Cook's attitude. He turns down Senior Bowl. Those questions amp up. There might be questions about Baker Mayfield's attitude. I think he would accept a Senior Bowl invitation in a heartbeat and go there and face any of those questions.
This weekend, there are some really good games involving good prospects. We get Oklahoma State at Pittsburgh. Max Brown may be off our – we may lose our joke of a graduate transfer, tall quarterback guy with Brown struggling in Pitt, got knocked out of the game. His backup, you know, came in and led Pitt to their only scoring drive of the day. He's going to have a good week. And Mason Rudolph, James Washington and company are really rolling right now. Now, Pitt's defense is going to present a challenge like Oklahoma State hasn't had thus far, but it's not like they're exactly Alabama or LSU defensively either.
Yeah, Max Brown is the first quarterback they're going to touch on tonight that or this week that might lose his starting job or seems like he might be on the verge of losing his starting job. Last week, he got knocked out of the game with a big hit. He got his helmet knocked off, and his backup came in, and the backup comes in and scores Pitt's only touchdown last week against Penn State. So now the question is, do you stick with Max Brown? Right now, Pat Narduzzi, the head coach at Pitt, he says he is sticking with Max Brown, but that means Max Brown, even the fact that these questions are being asked means that he's got to step up to the plate and perform this week. And we know Big 12 defenses aren't always the biggest challenge. So maybe this is a chance for Max Brown to regain some solid footing and get back into the driver's seat for that Pitt job before they start playing around with a rotation or flat-out bench them altogether. I think Rudolph and Washington and the rest of the Oklahoma State offense are going to be just fine. They're going to put up numbers. Pitt's going to be the team that has to hang. They're lucky they're at home. But I think this is ultimately going to be a high-scoring game. Oklahoma State wins, but it's imperative, again, for Max Brown to go out there and put up big numbers. I honestly thought, looking at him in the first week, I was like, he makes some decent throws. I think Eric Galco from Optimum Scouting actually spotlighted two throws that he made this past weekend that should have been caught. One was a third down at 23. And it was a very nice pass. He stepped up in the pocket, fired it accurately, and it just flat out got dropped. He was victimized by two big-time drops. That can't happen, or Max Brown's going to – his teammates are going to help him lose the job. I think ultimately he's probably – well, he looks like the best passer on that roster right now. Does the other guy come in, give them a little bit of a spark because of his mobility? Maybe so. When college teams start jerking around with their quarterback rotations after two games, doesn't always go very well for that team this, you know, for the season. And I go back to that Ohio State situation. That's why Urban Meyer is going to stick with JT Barrett. And I had to get that thrown in there for the Draft Breakdown podcast drinking it, because we're not previewing Ohio State this week.
Exactly. When you look at James Washington Jr., he and a guy we'll talk about in the next game have been putting up just ridiculous numbers so far. I know people get concerned with Oklahoma State offensive players in general, you know, whether it's the quarterback or wide receivers, you know, but he's a guy that has really done everything that you want from a now four-year player. Steadily improved each season. Is he a guy that can be a day one selection or should be a day one selection as a wide receiver?
It's going to come down to 40 time with him. He's going to have to run sub 4.5 40, and then maybe you could talk about him on day one. Certainly got the production. I look at his body type. Does he remind you, just from a body type standpoint, does he remind you of Ty Montgomery?
A little bit. He's, you know, he plays really physical. That's what
I like. Montgomery's got a lot. I think he's put on about 15 pounds since he got into the league. But just look at him at Washington. He's very solidly built. He wears that running back number, 28. So he's got that running back look to him, even while he's out there. And like you said, he's a very physical guy, but he doesn't strike me as a burner. I don't think he's going to hit that 4.4 mark. And he's going to have to, you know, this can't be a situation where he runs like a 4.56 at the combine and then runs a 4.48 at Oklahoma State Pro Day. He won't go on day one. I'm looking at him as a day two prospect, which is where we've seen players that have that can fill a more of a possession role, more of a flanker role, someone who's, I think, will time better than Jarvis Landry, but that type of physical player that can. Now, Washington is a deep ball guy for Oklahoma State, and I'm not sure how well those skills are going to translate to the pros, because he's going to have a lot better corners that he's going against, and I don't think he's going to get great separation. But the thing is, dude has an excellent ability to adjust his body to tough balls and make tough catches in traffic, and I like a lot about him.
The next game we're going to talk about, SMU, and maybe wide receiver one in this draft class, Courtland Sutton taking on TCU. Now, usually when, you know, a non-Power 5 team takes on a Power 5 team, it's a chance for that player to, you know, kind of show up and show out. Except TCU hasn't exactly been the defensive stalwart that they were in the early Gary Patterson years. When you watch Sutton, and they list him as a junior because there was an injury his freshman year, right? So he got an extra year of eligibility, even though he's a fourth year junior. Is that right?
Right. He's a fourth year junior.
So, I mean, he's basically in his senior season.
He's for sure. He's already said this is going to be his final season. He came back actually. And I think we talked about this with Justin Mello when he was on the show for the Group of Five preview, that Courtland Sutton actually returned to graduate to get his degree. He's going to do that this year, and then he will for sure declare for the draft.
We saw him absolutely demolish North Texas last week after, you know, a quiet first game. What do you want to see, or what do you need to see from him? Are big games like, you know, the 6 for 164 or 163 and 4 touchdowns. Sorry, 8 catches. Sorry, 8 catches for 163 and 4 touchdowns. Are those more important than seeing, you know, the 5 catches for 95 yards and a touchdown? That's the one thing that concerns me. Maybe not with Sutton, but with some of these guys, is that there's not the consistency that of game to game. Overall, their numbers look great, but there isn't, you know, 95 yards a game. It's usually a big game, and then, you know, they kind of fall back the next game.
Well, for one thing, with Sutton, he hasn't been dealing with consistent quarterback play.
SMU, 100% accurate with Sutton.
The accuracy of the quarterbacks last year was poor, well below 60%. In fact, I think that spotlights a lot of what I really like about him, his ability to adjust to tough catches, make tough catches along the sidelines in particular. I don't think Courtland Sutton's a burner. I do think he's going to run in the 4.5s. And at his size, if he runs in the low 4.5s, he'll be a first-round pick. I think that's what's going to come down to, is his athletic testing and his speed, because I don't need to see much more out of him as a receiver. He's a glider. And he excels on those short crossers and slants, and then picking up yards after the catch. And he shows a lot of acrobatic ability to keep his feet down in bounds along those sidelines, make those catches that are thrown up high, the back shoulder throws. So it kind of reminded me, I said this last year, he reminds me of Josh Gordon in the open field. I don't think he's quite that level of an athlete. But he's a very good athlete. He's got a basketball background. He's one of those guys that posts videos of him box jumping like 60 inches. So he's definitely got some spring to him, and he's got some juice in the legs. I do think he's got potential to be the top receiver in this draft. I think other players right now are competing with him to kind of overtake him. I think he has the edge. I think Justin Mello told us that Sutton was going to be a day two pick had he declared after his redshirt sophomore year. As far as like the level of competition, the reason he didn't have a big game week one, they were playing a cupcake on their schedule. I think it was even correct me if I'm wrong, but I think it was an FCS team. Last week, obviously had a huge game. If he continues that momentum this week, I think he's going to be really, he's the only, I don't know much about TCU this year, to be honest with you. I know they have a running back, Kyle Hicks, who's a senior. They're probably one of the more highly regarded senior running backs. But beyond that, I don't know too much about them. I just know that Sutton facing, like you said, a Power 5 team this week, I'm looking for him to have another big game. He might not reach that 20 yards per catch, 4 touchdown level, but he's right now he's in the driver's seat, I think, for wide receiver one. And I probably just jinxed him. I don't think this is going to be a Clayton Thorson level jinx, but you know, if Sutton doesn't score 2 touchdowns this week, don't at me on Twitter.
Another great, you know, game in terms of what is going on with this prospect is Oregon State at Washington State. And Luke Falk, who a lot of people really like coming into this year. Dissension may not be the right word, but there are some questions appearing about Falk. What are your thoughts on the situation with Washington State and Luke Falk?
Before last week, I didn't think there was a situation. But then Falk gets pulled for a series. He's having a bad game last week against Boise State. He gets pulled for a series. His backup comes in, I think throws an interception. You know, head coach Mike Leach, he wanted to make a point, some kind of point to Luke Falk by pulling him out of the game. He puts him back in the game the next series. Ultimately, Falk gets knocked out of the game by a big hit. He's healthy enough. He's going to start this week. I do think he was pulled at that point for injury, but he is going to start this week. So he's not got a serious concussion or anything like that. But the backup goes in. I think his name's Helinski. He's a redshirt sophomore, and he goes on to lead Washington State to a triple overtime win over Boise State. So now the question is, what's it going to take next for Luke Falk to get pulled again? Because obviously this Helinski kid can play a little bit in this system too. I saw Luke Falk in a mock going to the Cleveland Browns, 16th overall. I presume that was supposed to be with the Houston Texans pick that the Browns acquired. 16th overall, picking Luke Falk. I will say this tonight. There is no chance Luke Falk's going in the top 16, top 20 of this draft. And I highly doubt that he goes in the first round. And we can go back and delete this episode 95 if he ends up going in the top 15. But right now I'm telling you, it's not going to happen. And I guarantee you, just that one series is going to raise a whole hell of a host of questions among NFL scouts. I'm sure they already had a lot to begin with. Even Washington State fans that I talked to, they have told me they think Luke Falk is a great college quarterback, not a great pro prospect. Similar to how Ohio State fans hate JT Barrett now, but how they might have spoken of him a year or two ago. This isn't a situation where, you know, I think Falk is a pro prospect more so than a guy like Barrett. But when we were talking about Mayfield, for example, a few minutes ago, third to fifth round seems about right. This Luke Falk, I think I've said this on the show before, he reminds me of Jared Goff light. And I had about a second, third round grade on Jared Goff. He was a day two guy to me.
The next game involves a hot take.
Hold on. I gave this take 3 flame emojis when I sent it to Seth.
So 3 out of 5 flame emojis. 3 out of 5 on the Gam Scout skill. So when you look at...
is that what we're calling our scale now? Three out of five on the Gam Scout scale.
We'll call it the Gam View. That's what we'll call it.
It could be a... Could it be the Fusu scale?
Yeah, we'll call it the Gam View, a combo of Gam Scout and Fusu views.
The Gam's your cup scale?
Yeah, Gam's your cup. When you look at this game, LSU at Mississippi State, and you know what? It's your hot take that you found. Go ahead and give it to us, and then we'll get into the game.
Okay. So this was Tony Pauline tweeting this on Wednesday. He was actually replying to one of the writers from Roto World, Thor, who does their college football fantasy league type of analysis at Roto World. But in the tweet, and this was tweeted out Wednesday on Tony Pauline's timeline in the reply. So if you want to go look for it, you can find it there. But he tweeted his top five quarterbacks, and he had Nick Fitzgerald, the quarterback from Mississippi State, as his fifth quarterback, ahead of Mason Rudolph, ahead of, I think, Luke Falk, ahead of some of these guys we've already talked about. I think Rudolph was the most surprising to me that he would have Nick Fitzgerald ranked ahead but this is LSU at Mississippi State. This week, Nick Fitzgerald gets to kind of piggyback off that hot take, and he's going up against an LSU defense that gets defensive end slash outside linebacker slash edge Arden Key back for the first time this season. He's been recovering from offseason rotator cuff shoulder surgery. So Fitzgerald is as Seth mentioned on our SEC preview, he's a former triple option quarterback in high school, right?
Yep. And everybody loves the wing T.
Yeah. So he threw something like 80 some passes or something like that in his whole high school career. Now he's thrown a lot more than that in college. And we talked about how he had a 54% completion percentage last year. So far through two games this year, he's at 60%, 7.7 yards per attempt. And he's got five TDs, only one pick. He's also rushed 17 times for 152 yards, and he had three touchdowns. Two of those came last week. He had 111 yards rushing last week alone. So I had no idea that we were going to be talking about Fitzgerald as a prospect this year. Maybe I'm naive. I know we were having fun with the, you know, with Gam Scout, Justin Gamble, always good for a strong take, but I think he actually likes Nick Fitzgerald too. And he actually thinks we should be talking about Nick Fitzgerald more. So maybe, I mean, when Tony Pauline says it, that means he's hearing it from NFL scouts as well. I don't know how great those sources are. I know Tony's great for sources regarding underclassmen that are going to declare, but I did note on his timeline that he said that pro scouts were grading Nick Fitzgerald in the summertime with the anticipation that he's a player who might declare. I think he's got his work cut out for him. LSU's defense is going to be tough, and Key is going to go up against another touted Mississippi State player, their left tackle, Martinez Rankin, who was a JUCO transfer, now in his second year as a starter at Mississippi State. And I know that's a guy, I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, Seth, but Justice is very high on Martinez Rankin as well, right?
I believe so. I believe so.
So you got, I mean, this game offers some really nice prospect competition with Key going against Rankin, going against Fitzgerald, and then you've got on the other side running back Darius Geis, who everybody loves. So this is a great prospect game on Saturday.
And it's great for Fitzgerald because as much as we all want to love what he could be, in the first game against Charleston Southern, FCS school, he completed 55% of his passes, and he threw 29, so he was 16 of 29. Last week in, you know, their demolition of Louisiana Tech, he only threw 18 passes. He only had 124 yards passing. Yes, he personally was responsible for five touchdowns. That he had a great statistical game overall. But when you're talking about a quarterback prospect only throwing the ball 18 times in a game, that's low. And I'm not talking about a Navy quarterback. I'm talking about a guy that's getting touted as a potential day two draft pick only throwing the ball 18 times in a game. I'm really interested to see what they do with him against this LSU defense and how he looks, because, you know, if they're protecting him, if they're only going to have him throw 20 times because they're trying to protect, or not protect him, but protect the offense and use him more as a runner, I don't know if you can take him seriously as a day two, you know, first three rounds, probably first five round prospect, because it tells me there is going to be a massive amount of work that has to be done to get him anywhere near the realm of being a pro-ready quarterback.
Is Fitzgerald just getting a boost right now because of his height?
Size, athleticism. Yeah.
Right. I don't think that's going back to our buddy Justin Gamble. I know he wouldn't rate a guy like Fitzgerald based on those things. He's all about traits, and he sees something in his throwing that is why he thinks that Fitzgerald should be talked about more. But going back to Pauline and what he's hearing from scouts, I think we know from evidence from years past that that's something they immediately hone in on, because we've seen so many guys touted by NFL scouts where the only possible reason could be their height and weight, because they simply don't put it on the field. Now, I think I like Fitzgerald as a college player.
Oh, I love him.
I was actually very impressed with them at the end of last year, and including their bowl game. I think there's a lot to like there. But like you said, he seems far off as a passer. I mean, we're not talking about Mitch Leidner here, but he seems far off as an NFL-type passer. It seems like there's a lot more that needs to go on there, and that's why I wasn't really even thinking we'd talk about him this year. So it's fun. It's fun that it comes up, because now we can talk about it. But I feel like it feels a little strange that there aren't people talking about him moving to tight end or something like that because of his relative inexperience as a passer.
Well, let's be fair. This podcast has already said that once, so we're usually ahead of the curve here. And that's why I said, if he plays well, if he goes 18 for 25 for 230 yards and two touchdowns, then yes, he's making strides. But if they're having to hide him, if he goes 12 for 20, but he runs the ball 18 times because he's a better runner, then we're not talking about how good of a college player he is. We're talking about, is he an NFL prospect? And it's silly to me that we would have this conversation or not have this conversation with him, and then other people are willing to ignore just how great Lamar Jackson has been the first 2 weeks of the season. So,
right. Lamar Jackson, I think he's proven a lot more as a passer than Fitzgerald has. But like you said, man, this is a great test for Fitzgerald. He faces a good defense. He's at home, so they've got the home field advantage. I would like to see him go out there and sling it a little bit. He's just not a guy who's passed that much in his career, even to this date. So 6'5", 230 pounds. That's what he's listed at on the Mississippi State roster, and I really think that's a big part of what's carrying his momentum at this point. It's that and the hope that he will translate some of this athleticism into being a better passer. He'll be a fun guy to watch. If people are talking about him, then it's going to be fun to break this guy down because of how new he is to the whole passing thing.
Finally, the biggest game of the night. And I think the moment, at least for now, but this could be the defining moment of Lamar Jackson's career. And it could and should catapult him into, rare air if he continues on the tear he has been on the first 2 weeks. And that's, Clemson and Louisville. Clemson's defense is, I mean, they made Jarrett Stidham look like we were silly for even talking about him. They're for real. I mean, their defense is fantastic. And nobody's been able to stop Lamar Jackson. Granted, it's been two games this year, but nobody's been able to even slow him down yet. This is that type of game where everybody knows who he is. Everybody knows he's a great college quarterback. But I think it could really do something for the public perception of him as a draft prospect if he goes out there and puts up a, one of those special performances that, you and I think he's capable of.
Right. We talked about Clemson's defense on a previous show. They have some big-time prospects. I think we talked about them in our ACC preview. And they've got some big-time prospects, especially in that front seven, especially on that defensive line. So first of all, I want to talk about Christian Wilkins. Last week, 10 tackles, 2 tackles for loss, 1.5 sacks in a win over Auburn. So they have a mobile quarterback there, Jarrett Stidham. and Wilkins was dominant as far as a defensive and interior defensive lineman. He was as dominant as you can be, and he has already been billed as an athletic freak. I said on the ACC preview podcast that I thought he would be like a top 10 type of player. He's gearing up to be in the top 5 discussion, possibly the top defensive player picked. So the other guy that we should talk about, and we got this on Twitter. We got this take on Twitter from at Zutoo Sports, Z-U-T-O-O Sports. We sent a tweet out asking if anybody had a hot take, and Zutoo Sports replied to us. He said, not sure if this is much of a hot take, but I have Cleland Farrell of Clemson as my top draft-eligible edge guy at the moment. Farrell is a redshirt sophomore, and I don't know if that's a hot take either because I haven't had many, many looks at him. I've obviously seen him in passing, but because he was a redshirt freshman last year, I didn't go too deep into him. So let's see what Cleland Farrell, what Christian Wilkins are able to accomplish this week. I think that's high praise if you're saying Cleland Farrell is the top edge guy, because we just mentioned Arden Key. There's guys from Alabama like Deshaun Hand. I don't know how high he's going to be end up being touted, but then you've got those Ohio State guys, Sam Hubbard and Tyquan Lewis. And I'm sure there's other guys that I'm not thinking of. We talked about Josh Sweat from Florida State, for example. So there are a lot of big-time edge guys that were big-time recruits and maybe haven't necessarily put it all together as college players. I think most people would say that Arden Key is the top edge guy coming into this year. I've seen him talked about as a top two guy. So Farrell, if he can crash that party, certainly an excellent performance by Wilkins and Farrell against a guy who I think Vegas agrees is the Heisman frontrunner once again, Lamar Jackson, a player who I think looks much improved as a passer over the past year and a half and seems right now poised to be in the conversation for first quarterback taken, which means number one overall pick. This is a big game. This is a game I think Seth and I will probably be watching together. So this will be fun to break this down next week. And I look forward to kind of reviewing this with you and going over the broadcast and the tape and looking at how this Clemson defense played against this dynamic college quarterback who I think is going to be a very good pro prospect in Jackson.
And our questions – and it wasn't a question, but it was what we would like to see. It's what we've talked about before with prospects and growth and continued growth. And you know, through two games, again, it's just been two games, so let's not get crazy, but it's been two games, and Lamar Jackson has done what you wanted to see from him in those two games. His completion percentage right now is 64.7%. That's up 8.5 percentage points from his, you know, from his Heisman Trophy winning sophomore season. His yards per attempt is up to over nine yards per attempt. Knock on wood, hasn't thrown an interception yet. I mean, he has shown the growth that you would want to see from him after being so dynamic and so good in his first two seasons. As you continue to see that growth, as you continue to see that, it does open up the possibility that, okay, is this guy going to be the quarterback one? And again, it's we're not trying to do week to week. But if you're talking about through two games, what you've seen, a guy improving like you wanted him to, you have to love what you've seen from Lamar Jackson. And there was a great article from our buddies over at Setting the Edge. Deontay Lee wrote the article on Lamar Jackson and why he is quarterback one. Deontay and I are working on maybe him coming on the show while Justin's on vacation the last week of September, and Deontay and I doing a show. And it'll probably be Lamar Jackson heavy, just a heads up. So, but we're working on that right now, just trying to get our schedules to line up. So
if he's really good, then he can just take over for me because you know, I'm almost at retirement age anyways. But, you know, to piggyback off what you're saying about Lamar, you know, look, right now he's outplaying what we've seen from Sam Darnold in the early going. He even looks better from throwing motion standpoint and things like that. You know, Darnold's got a lot of mechanical things that we've seen people say, well, they're going to try and coach him up on that. Well, that's easier said than done. So I think right now what we're seeing, Lamar Jackson, Josh Rosen going toe-to-toe for that top quarterback spot, both having good big-time early season performances. Rosen's got 9 touchdowns, I think, 0 interceptions. We talked about last week how Texas A&M could add a couple of interceptions against him in that first week. And Lamar Jackson hasn't played a bad half of football like Josh Rosen did in that first half against Texas A&M while they were digging that hole that he helped miraculously climb out of. So right now I give the edge to Jackson, and I think right now just track record, experience, progression, athleticism, arm strength. The question is going to be about Lamar Jackson's size. We think he's probably going to be about 6'2", so he's going to have to come in at like 6'15", or I'm sorry, about 215 pounds to 220 pounds. I think that's doable. We heard these same questions about Deshaun Watson last year. He came in at 222 pounds, I think, or 221 pounds, ends up going in the top 12. We've heard these questions about Teddy Bridgewater. He was ended up being a first-round pick still. Derek Carr as well ended up being a first-round pick. Marcus Mariota, also considered a player with thin frame, he ended up being number 2 overall pick. Ultimately, the frame's going to be a question. Is it going to be a deciding factor? I don't think so. This is a kid who is playing lights out right now, and if he goes up against this defense on Saturday night and does what we think he can do, and again, this is a Louisville home game. They're at Papa John's Stadium out there in Louisville, Kentucky. Hey, this is a player right now in the driver's seat, not only for the Heisman, but also for QB1. So I really like what I've seen. I've got a chance to see enough of him in 2 weeks to have a pretty good feel for, you know, what direction this evaluation is going. So I really like him.
And just a quick clarification, Derek Carr was drafted in the 2nd round. We know that, but
Right. I just meant the fact that he had the build concerns, but yeah. I think ultimately Carr fell more for the system concerns or for coming from a non-Power 5 school than his frame. And then they loved him at the Senior Bowl.
And Justice and I maybe it's Ben Albright as well have talked about quite a bit. There was a lot of teams that were concerned about his home life because he was married with kids already, and so they were concerned about would he be able to focus on football.
You and I can vouch that when you have kids, it's very difficult to focus on football sometimes.
Exactly. So
or anything else really, other than right, like Elmo other than the, or yeah. snacks, whatever.
Exactly. My daughter's into Peppa Pig right now, so good luck.
Oh, Peppa Pig! Yes, the pig with the British accent.
Yeah.
If you don't know what we're talking about, when you have kids, you might find out. Or there'll probably be some new cartoon by then.
Exactly. So, you had a couple hot takes before we get out of here tonight.
Yeah, just had a couple hot takes that were sent to me over the weekend. I wanted to say, shout outs to our buddies Derek Clausen at QB Class, KLASS, and at Four Verts, our buddy Charles McDonald, agreeing on this take. It was Derek who sent the tweet. He said, Justin Herbert is the best quarterback in the conference. Justin Herbert is a sophomore quarterback at Oregon. And Charles agreed, quoting Derek with a yes. So they are saying that Justin Herbert, the sophomore at Oregon, is better than both Sam Darnold and Josh Rosen. So that's going to be a fun one to keep track of because Herbert, I don't believe he's draft eligible at this point.
No, he's not.
And, I think Oregon plays Friday night. So I haven't even looked at this guy. I just know our buddy Jim Coburn took him high in a developmental draft in our fantasy league. But I really don't know too much about – I didn't watch any Oregon football last year because I didn't want to watch terrible football. But apparently they're off to a quick start with Willie Taggart at head coach. So that could be a fun one to watch. And I liked that take just because it took a dump on two of the top three quarterbacks in a presumably historic draft class. And no, I'm not counting Josh Allen in those top three quarterbacks.
By the way, this game is actually Saturday night with every other
game. Oh, Saturday night.
But this game is Oregon at Wyoming. So we get another opportunity for Josh Allen to at least be the best quarterback on the field that he's playing on. So he's one of two thus far.
Hey, Josh Allen lit up Garner Webb last week.
Yeah. Oh, I said he was the best quarterback in one of two games thus far. So, you know, we'll see how this one goes. His teammates definitely are going to let him down at this point. And the coach did not call enough deep shots in the game. So I'm getting those out of the way early. So, but it's at home. It's in Wyoming. So should be a fun game. I'm guessing a lot of points. If Allen doesn't put up big numbers, there's going to – I don't know.
It's just another strike in the – doesn't play up to his competition box, you know. It's just another strike there. If this game's on the Pac-12 network, nobody's going to see it anyway.
It's on CBS Sports, so it's not even on like CBS Channel 5. It's on like the CBS Sports Network.
Well, actually, so. I get that channel. So that's better than it being on Pac-12. If we wait for it to go on Draft Breakdown, it's going to get taken down right away because the Pac-12 are hoarders when it comes to their video. They just won't let an ounce of it come out on the internet. It's you know, wildly protected, like top secret. I guess more so than top secret government information.
Anything else tonight before we get out of here?
One more quick hot take. This was from Jeff Kavanaugh, who does a podcast, I think, with Dane Brugler. And on Saturday last weekend, he was saying UNC quarterback Brandon Harris is in because the starter got hurt. And holy cow, the arm he has. Brandon Harris is a graduate transfer actually from LSU. He's at UNC for the last year of his eligibility. And Dane tried to talk Jeff down from that take, saying he's not good. Don't be fooled by that touchdown pass, which was easily his best throw. But Jeff Kavanaugh, he wanted to double down, and he just said just how easy those 15-yard outs are is impressive. The throw Lamar can't make, Harris does with his eyes closed. So Brandon Harris is making throws that a guy I just said might be QB1 apparently can't make. And not only that, but Brandon Harris is doing it with his eyes closed. I got to watch this kid because he sounds like a lot like Brandon Bridge. And if you don't know who I'm talking about, a couple years ago.
Yeah, Justice Mosqueda's love affair with Brandon Bridge. So
yeah, and not only Justice, but many people on draft Twitter were in love with this guy from South Alabama. He was a transfer there. He was a Canadian prospect named Brandon Bridge, and he, going back to what I was joking about earlier, had all the tools. He just couldn't hit the broadside of a barn with a pass. But, man, people hung in. They hung in on their Brandon Bridge takes throughout the whole bitter season into the cold months of winter. And Brandon Bridge was never drafted. And he went to Canada where I think they use him as like a goal line specialist.
He's probably – I mean, he and Vernon Adams are probably in a quarterback battle to see who plays. So.
I think Brandon Bridge actually plays more than – Vernon Adams up there.
Yeah, he's up on the Saskatchewan Rough Riders of the
Canadian. I think he gets more PT than Vernon Adams. You know, the quarterback one of Kian Fahey, who will never hear this, and we won't ever see it. Even if he did, we wouldn't see his reply because he's got us both blocked.
But yeah, so it's you know, anytime you can get a couple guys that I don't know, something we've talked about before. A lot of times people start to reach isn't the word, but they go over, and it's that firster mentality. Like, I'm going to be the first one that says this. Now we're doing it in jest with Nick Fitzgerald moving the tight end. Like that's a semi joke. If it's right, it's not a joke at all, but we'll delete the end of this podcast and it'll never have been heard. But you know, we're semi joking about that, but
I mean, I tried to first or Thorson last week and it blew up in my face. It didn't even take, it took like 2 hours on Saturday.
Exactly. So, you know, just be careful. Just be careful what you ask for.
Yeah, it's like a grill. Like, stand back from it while you're putting the lighter fluid on. You know, you don't want your eyebrows to get singed by your own hot take.
So, well, that's it from us tonight. We'll be back next week. Hopefully, we'll be able to give you guys a little bit of a conversation. By the way, I was 100% correct. Brandon Bridge does play in front of Vernon Adams on the Saskatchewan Rough Riders. So
perfect.
So good job, Justice. You got one.
Got one over Kian.
Yeah. So you guys, you know, there's gotta be a niche market there for doing CFL evaluations. So, but we'll be back next week. Have a little more fun. Talk about this week's games. Talk about quarterback one, Lamar Jackson. We may or may not have Deontay Lee from Setting the Edge with us, or that might be a couple weeks away. So we'll see. But thanks as always for listening. Check us out on SoundCloud. Check us out on iTunes. We're also on Blog Talk Radio. So you can find us pretty much anywhere podcasts are downloadable. Oh, yeah, Stitcher Radio as well. So anywhere that you can download a podcast, you can find the Draft Breakdown podcast. We appreciate you listening. As always, we'll be back next week, and have a good night, everybody.